Welcome back to Hour 2, Soundspace 300. We are in the spot with an in-studio interview that was recorded Sunday, May 12th, 2019 in the Spokane Public Radio Studios at 1229 North Monroe, Spokane, Washington. Jesse Sykes, Solomon Sykes, born July 17, 1967, is an American singer and songwriter, best known for her band Jesse Sykes and the Sweet Hereafter, which was formed in 1999 with Phil Wanscher. Sykes was born in Mount Kisco, New York, and grew up in Pound Ridge, New York. An obsession with Lynyrd Skynyrd drove her to purchase her first guitar at the age of 12. Jesse has an eye for the visual. She got her BFA in photography from the esteemed Rhode Island School of Design. We both were in Seattle, Washington in the early 90s. Sykes moved to Seattle in 1990 after a brief stint in New York City. She began playing in bands there and formed a band called Hominy with her then-husband Jim Sykes, who played guitar. In 1998, she met Phil Wanscher, one of the founders of the alt-country band Whiskey Town. They formed the band Jesse Sykes and the Sweet Hereafter. The music that we're hearing now is aptly called Introduction 1. Jesse and Phil did a soundtrack for the Seattle Shakespeare Company for their production of The Tempest. It's a beautiful album. This interview is going to be like a collage. Collage of emotion, insight, wisdoms, baffled movements and thoughts, all for the love of life, for the sensitivity of our ins and outs, our day to day, and how that affects what we do, what we recognize, and how we're motivated. Join me right now as we go into the studio with Jesse Sykes. I'll give you a landing place for how this interview begins. Jesse and Phil are currently in the studio after a break from the rock scene, recording their newest album, which will be coming out soon. It's been a long and arduous endeavor, and the world has changed a lot since Jesse and Phil were full-blown on tour, on the road with Jesse Sykes and the Sweet Hereafter. Social media has come on to our scene, into our world, and it's a big plate for someone who's recognized and loved, like Jesse and Phil and their band. People are so excited to have them back, almost back, and yet there sure are those challenges. Let's hear a little bit of what that feeling is for Jesse now, coming back a bit older and in this new world that we're in. Here in the spot. Are you in denial about how much you're on that phone every day or on these pages or on? Honestly, they're already starting to put these things into images of conglomerates that now have real estate on the hours of our day. These places thrive on dictating the culture then. And absolutely. I bet you're seeing that. You're seeing that coming back in, re-recording, you know. I mean, it's all a new game, I'm sure. I'll bet it can be really overwhelming.
I think what's baffling to me, though, is it's impossible in some ways to have a conversation now and not bring up social media, yeah. You know? And like sometimes I feel like I've been beaten down and I'm afraid to talk openly just because it's not about trolls or people being mean. It's more just you get tired of that thing where people say, well, you're on Facebook right now, you know, like you're such a hypocrite. And it's just like tiresome, you know. What I like about social media, of course, is it's sort of a way to study humanity and be an emotional anthropologist. But you have to put on armor. It's like diving. I think of those old fashioned diving suits.
Oh, yeah.
Or being, I just have to buck up and kind of be prepared that 1 minute in that pipeline and I can fall from grace and I can go from being in a really nice functional state to sort of being very confused and yeah. Feeling kind of hopeless. And I mean, generally, I don't spend much time on Facebook.
The amazing, you know, fact is that like marketing and PR's focuses are to nail those kinds of situations,
right.
Where how can you say something that's going to be so powerful and fly like fire in the least amount of words?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really
mm-hmm.
odd place to be because it does narrow down the expression. It leaves it more open for misinterpretation.
Absolutely. So this argument that you're doing your kid some kind of favor by starting them young, I don't know, man. I just look at like neurologically what it's doing. And here we are. And now people are sort of getting the memo. But, you know, I feel like I used to sort of be one of the only people being vocal about this. And I took a lot of heat in my local
yeah.
community. But now, you know, of course, people are getting the memo, asking these questions. But I don't think it's something that you can stop talking about. I don't think you can address it enough.
Well, no. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, what is the strategy of your own brand, of who you are and what control you have over that self-brand, right? I mean, it really is the brand of the self that you're looking at here in a lot of ways. What you had brought up was how I want control of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to have the say and the decision-making power and, whoa, this is really different than last time. And now there are all these platforms and now there are all these places where it's really difficult to hone in the all-exclusive rights to
mm-hmm.
yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
What an interesting concept.
It's
I mean,
insanity.
It's actually a metaphor, you know, the things that you are thinking about and, you know, what matters to you right now as you're in the studio as well, which is like, wow. And I did get through your the beginning of the documentary about the band.
Oh,
and I love the section where you talk about everybody thinks, hey, go enjoy the studio. Hey, have fun in that studio, man. And you're like, whoa, you know what? This can be like self-imposed prison time. And I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah,
what are the challenges of the studio when you go in?
Well, I can only speak for myself. And
yeah, because Phil's a big part in the rest of your band, I'm sure.
Well, Phil and I are very similar, and I think in this sense, like I say in that little film, and thank you so much for watching it. I mean,
it's great.
I don't know what to call them. They're not films. They're technically videos. Yeah, I get so confused, but whatever. They've been kind of saving me in many ways because I can create them myself and
I don't
have to pay anybody and I can make the music for them and just mm-hmm. explore. Yeah, no, I think for me, obviously there's no separation. I mean, music is, I always say it's like my vehicle. For whatever reason, it's the thing that grabbed me the hardest in terms of how I wanted to testify existence, I guess you would say, how I would love and find my place in terms of being a human. Like, what, there's no rhyme or reason, though. Like, I mean, I went to art school, I majored in photography, I was doing a lot in film. Mm-hmm. But that whole time I was like, man, like, what am I doing? I got to be doing music. And I knew somewhere inside at a young age, it was all one of the same ultimately, and yeah, it would all find its place. But I guess I have to take the long story here, and I apologize.
It's okay.
Probably since I was about 12, I knew, or even when I was about 3. I hate saying the word, I suffer I depression. I just ride the wavelength of sorrow. Like, I just felt melancholy at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. And I wouldn't trade that, of course, for the world. Like, I just, at 3 years old, I remember just the piano. We always had pianos, and like the sound of a few keys, or, you know, my mom listened to classical music, or just being put down for a nap and hearing the sound of a little B flat of loneliness. You know, you'd be like left in the afternoon in your crib or whatever, and just feeling that hum of being. Somewhere along the line, as I, you know, went down through life, or went through the journey of life, it did get more complicated, and melancholy at times touched on serious depression. Mm-hmm. And it was art that saved me. I mean, it sounds so 101, you know, but, and it was at art school, I realized, like, as long as I was working just in the dark room and out shooting, I was doing, you know, I was a real street photographer.
Yeah,
You know, Gary Winogrand and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I just got that at a young age. Like, as long as you don't put that camera down, you're going to be okay. Because I learned, you know, the first summer I had gone home from school and hit a major depression. And then I realized I can never go home again. I can never stop. So I kind of just, boom, you know. So that part was sort of cemented, where it's like, that darkness or depression or pain and sorrow, which isn't darkness, I mean, that's just, you know, the experience of being human, was all one of the same, and it was all embedded in whatever I was going to do. So therefore, cutting into your question, going into the recording studio, for some people, it's kind of like going into a clinic, and it's kind of like giving a droplet of blood, and you have this process, and it's kind of clean and sterile, and, like, you know, let's make sure you don't get an infection, we'll wipe your face. I mean, this is a weird analogy.
Depending on how dissected the experience is too, right?
Yeah.
In pieces, it is.
And for me, it's just like my life, my death, everything is involved. And so I'd like to think I'm professional, and I don't come off as being difficult or insane during the process. I'm like always reaching for something that isn't always obtainable, or it's, you're not able to realize what you've received or gotten until you've had a little distance from it. So I just think that it's generally a really awesome experience, but there are just moments where it can be very painful because you're not quite cracking the code. And depending who you're working with, some people just want to take the path of least resistance. And I would say Phil and I are just the opposite of that. We'll go, you know, we'll go as far out there, which could mean like it takes 6 years to finish something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's time sometimes is the, I mean, it's part of the equation.
Love me someday. I'll be here as long as the night, the moon so bright, will love me someday. I will be here someday I'll be here as long as the night, the moon so bright will love me someday.
It really does make a lot of sense. And it reminds me of the Martha Graham, the way she thought about things. And that was, is that there's a certain level of dissatisfaction that has to occur in the process. And if it's not, if you're not hitting that mark of dissatisfaction, which is turning the tables completely on what the creative process really is about, which is a challenge, and it mm-hmm. takes a lot of energy, like you're saying, of a holistic kind, of like mm-hmm. your everything mm-hmm. in there. Our culture and our work culture is that you give the job everything that you can. Mm-hmm. Some of these jobs want you to be defined by them. Mm-hmm. And yet that's what the challenge of being a creative, in my eyes, mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. to break those barriers and say, well, I'm going to actually challenge myself to be dissatisfied with what's going on. Mm-hmm. And from that springs an incredible relationship with the creative process, is mm-hmm. where it's where the magic is mm-hmm. made. That's what Martha Graham, meant.
That's amazing.
By that. Yeah. And that's like, dance.
And of course,
mm-hmm. and choreography. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can imagine what it probably is musically, scores.
Well, I think, I like to use the metaphor. I think everyone can relate. This just came to me about digital versus analog. Mm-hmm. Like, having majored in photography back in the 80s, it was all film, of course. And one day, I just remember I was struggling technically with the early stages, because you had to, of course, you were developing your own negatives, your own film. And
processing all that.
And one day I took that one photo where I just nailed it, like the light. Mm-hmm. And can't explain it, but the photo was beautiful. And from that moment on, I never needed a light meter. I was able to literally, because the light meter was really hard for me to understand. I'm terrible at math. I failed Algebra 1 3 years in a row. A little bit dyslexic. So the whole thing.
Geometry.
It was very.
Killed me.
They were sort of, when you first started in photography, there was a little bit of too much of this technical thing going on. One day I just got light. That photo. Yeah. Imprinted on me. I remembered the situation. And from that day on, I mean, to this day, if I was using like 400 ASA film, I would know exactly the aperture. But more importantly, I realized like how important beautiful light is for a beautiful photo. So many things have to be happening contextually. There has to be a lot of things working to make a really amazing photo for what my aesthetic is. I mean, mm-hmm. street photography, composition, relevance to the timelessness, all these things. When you look at a lot of digital photography, even if the light technically is what I would say, wow, this is a beautiful melancholy light coming dripping through the window right now, whatever, there's a difference. And so if you took that metaphor and put it to music, I think sometimes what can be hard to explain to people too about recording is that, sort of back to that sound of being a baby in a crib and hearing that plane engine and the loneliness of just one drone. And I mean, to this day, when I hear a small plane flying overhead, it just brings me this familiar feeling. I can't explain it. It just existence, you know. And I think, what if I was born before single engine planes, you know, I would never have known that tone. But the point is, it's not just a good song. People say it's just all about the song. No, there's an imprint that happens sonically that's really important. There's a sound of the actual music itself too, that it puts it in a time and a space that like permeates the page, you know. And that's where recording can be very difficult. You can't control that. You just have to hope for it and know how to discern when it's not that, when somehow doesn't have that hum of existence in the actual capture, if you will, you know, for lack of a better term.
I
think it's just sometimes that simple.
It's like the gradation in between, you know, the black and white. And how are you going to dial in on that ball?
Yeah. And to me, the way something sounds is as impactful emotionally as the song and what the song is trying to say. So that's a huge part that I think, I mean, a lot of people do get it. I mean, there is so many amazing recordings, but I strive for, I don't know, just like making sure that weird sort of ephemeral layer exists that, so I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah,
or if I
no,
just sound
it does.
Like some...
I have a gift for you. And the gift for you is out of a book. It's called Against Forgetting, and it's 20th Century Poetry of Witness. It's Carolyn Forché was the editor, and she's a poet herself. And I have a little poem for you. Oh. And it is by Apollinaire. And this is called Postcard. And it was sent to André Rouvière on the 20th of August, 1915. So this book is all poetry of witness about the several wars and that we have put ourselves through as a civilization. Mm-hmm. And this is called Postcard. I write to you beneath this tent while summer day becomes a shade and startling magnificent flowers of the cannonade stud the pale blue firmament and before existing fade. And I give
beautiful.
That to you because I think one of your greatest powers is being against forgetting.
Wow.
And being beautiful. Against forgetting things and about things. And
you're going to make me cry right now. No, really, like that's you so nailed it. We should tell people there's a dog in the room so they don't think that was me while you were reading.
Oh, hey, that one's more famous than you and me combined. Little Itsy Bitsy. Everybody, listeners know Itsy Bitsy.
Brilliant.
She's the station mascot.
No, but seriously, just got tears in my...
Well, Jesse,
That's powerful, man, that you... Thank you for that. I mean, it's not like maybe I haven't thought of that, but the way you are, thank you for seeing that.
Yeah, sure thing. I'm seeing it because your songwriting and the new work that's coming out, and you shared with me Dwayne, which we should really have the listeners hear because I do want to play that. I want to take a pause here and just go ahead and play that for people. Thank you for sharing it.
My heart, I gave you my song, I gave you everything. And I'm not around to see you downtown, I'm drifting down. Ooh. Now ragtag hops over on Pine. Wanted a boy younger than I.
You're digging through a fodder right now. You're in a big transition. A lot of things mean a lot of different things to you now. And yet you are finding a huge amount of richness in the things you haven't forgotten about.
That's so beautiful.
And I think I Thank get you. That from the chapters, those videos I've watched. And yes, I wanted to let people know that you can go to YouTube and look at these chapters that you're working on. And it's like a memoir. It's like a visual memoir. Mm-hmm. It's poetic, it's lyrical, it's imagistic. And it really is some beautiful stuff. I hope you continue on it. That is, I think, what brought me around to this. I can relate to that because there's a point where I myself in my life felt like I had gone down the hole and I had to dig myself back up. And in doing that, it's a lot of work to bring yourself back. Mm-hmm. And when you bring yourself back, you are not the same person you were before. Mm-hmm. And you have to first off forgive yourself for that and recognize that and mm-hmm. accept it. But mm-hmm. then you have to say, well, then where is my authenticity and where does it really fall? And I think that comes from hashing the past out and putting it in the places that it serves you is the best way to say that. You know, I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I think that that's where your music just is really powerful, because I was trying to verbalize that to you, why your music, I think, really has a resonance. And your timing, I think, is wonderful, because there are a lot of people who do they're thinking these things. And this is a great kind of full circle about what we began talking about with, you know, what social media is and how does that define us? Well, it's our real authenticity that defines us. But that's the journey of life. That can take all your whole life. And you can die trying and not make it. And that's another reality, you know? And to have the creative process as a muse and a kind of bedfellow is one of the greatest things. It is healing and a salvation, and it plays a huge part in our day-to-day. It isn't for everybody. Not everybody oscillates that way, you know? And so sometimes you're finding yourself having to keep explaining yourself. And I think that that's where some of our kind of generations are caught. I think we're caught in a kind of fray of, well, how do I define that? But then how do I not act like I'm over-defining that?
I think these things too, Jesse.
Yeah, no, and a lot of other people do too. But we I think we have a gift of being able to verbalize it. It is a different path. It's not the path of least resistance. And it's also at the tune of your own drummer, as using a cliche.
I think,
you know,
that if I may just jump in.
Yeah.
I think when you were talking earlier about like the idea of everything becomes a brand because of the internet. And again, you can sound so presumptuous or self-aggrandizing when you talk about being human. And in my case, what I'm about to say is I've wanted to seek out being the best human I can be. And I really believe that the choice to make music came from a place of almost wanting to be like a minister, to give love and to not dismiss anyone. Because I think the thing I struggle with in life is I know how hurt I get when I feel dismissed. And people could be the biggest jerks and I never really could hate them or not forgive them.
Yeah.
And I always gave them the benefit of the doubt, where what if like they just got home from a funeral, or what if this person's being difficult because their husband has Alzheimer's. Something about serving a stranger is so loving. And God, what do I do with this love that I want? I just can feel this person and I can just feel their life. So there's that level that I struggle with navigating a world where the ego comes into that, where it's, I get that it's not all about me and not everyone's supposed to be handing me that cup every morning. Like it's all, you know, they have their struggles. It is just the way things have become. There's definitely this sense that that's empowerment to not get tangled up in anyone else.
Yes.
You know, if you're on an airplane, God forbid you talk to someone, which is hilarious because I talk to everyone because I'm terrified of flying. And
right,
I have
it's like,
to tell
please
them, you know?
Have a conversation.
You're in an airplane. If you want to talk privilege, how lucky are we that we can go across the world in 6 hours? That if you, like everyone's talking about privilege now, you need to reevaluate. How can you not find strangers fascinating, man? I get there are moments we all need our space, but I tend to, I'm skeptical of people who have to always let you know they need their space. Like, I need my space too. I live in Iowa. I'm a total recluse, frankly. But it's all relative. When I do venture out into the world, I'm very aware.
Feet forward,
That everybody has a story. And and so that back to the branding, that part is a struggle for me because it's never been about the end game. It was always about the journey. It was always about the love, not dismissing anyone. And it filled that gap. If there's a gap to be filled, and then what you were saying earlier so beautifully, the idea of being forgotten, I think, you know, I'm always transfixed on like ghosts and people who live before us. And I feel them and I wonder about them. And you know, we walk through cities and pretty much the whole world was built by dead people and everything we believe and our ghosts there because they're all dead. Those beautiful poems that are still held up here in the highest regard, and the cathedrals we walk through and the roads we drive are all ghosts. I mean, this is 101 mm-hmm. stuff, but I don't know. I'm just even reverent for dead people, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you refer to like hungry ghosts and things in songs and whatnot. But
yes.
The whole idea of the fact that there are, you know, different kinds of ghosts out there and, you know,
ghosts
and how they're
still alive.
Yeah, right.
Course,
right.
Our own selves. And
and how they relate to our own shadow side,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and then how they manifest. And it was really funny because I had written down the manifestation of Jesse Sykes. And I'm like, wait a minute, what does manifestation mean again? And then I'm like, can you re-manifest? And I was like, whoa, man. And I'm like, well, maybe I should just bring that up because you have to come back as something else. And, you know, a lot of people believe that your one life should be just that one journey.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
some people experience coming back more than once.
Mm-hmm.
You could have come back again when you were young,
mm-hmm.
somewhere along the way. You could have come back after a relationship shakeup.
Mm-hmm.
I think people can relate to this. There's phases and evolutions to us as who we are, and we're changing all the time.
We're
born
and we die many times in our one life.
Absolutely,
sure.
And your title is talks about that concept a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Forever being born, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think that's a big deal for a lot of people right now because of all the changes we are going through as a culture and what we can't get on the same page about. And,
mm-hmm.
and then how does that like feed us?
And so many layers to this.
Yeah.
It's so... Yeah. Getting aging is such a trip. Like, I always fancied myself as someone who wasn't vain. I mean, back in the day when we did a few photo shoots, you know, and they had stylists. Like, one time I did a photo shoot for a cover of a magazine in L.A., and, like, Juliette Lewis was there. And, I mean, the cover is, like, Minnie Driver and Mandy Moore and all these, like, famous women, and then there's me. And it was one of those fold-out covers where I was on the very end, and I actually started crying. And my bass player has some video of me, because it was too overwhelming. It was that part of everything that I just detest. And they had a stylist. They wanted to put makeup in their clothes, and I always refused that stuff. And when I was younger and more intact, and I always say I had the sheath of youth, you know, I struggled. I had my own issues. Mm-hmm. So it never really mattered. There are days, you know, you look in the mirror and you don't even recognize it. Like, these sort of DNA slippages happen, and you're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
You know, this is crazy. Or you'll see your reflection in someone else's mirror with a different lighting situation. And I do think it's a good thing to talk about, actually, because, you know, I always said I can't wait to be an old lady and just have all the experience and wisdom and be able to not be distracted by youth. Mm. And when I was young, I felt like no one's going to take me seriously, because I'm singing from a place I wanted to anyway. Mm-hmm. I was aspiring to sing from a place that was more ancient. And I always felt like youth was sort of this dumb obstacle. Like, even as a 20-year-old, I was like, I don't want to hang out with 20-year-olds. I wanted to be with the old guys that were, you know, in World War II or the Vietnam vets. And I wanted to hear their stories. And so I guess all I'm saying is that's one element that really, at times, not always, is a struggle. And I think the only time it's a struggle is when I kind of have to be thrown back into the fire, like play a show or something. Or, you know, I feel vulnerable now in ways that I didn't when I was in my 30s.
More vulnerable. I'll be more honest and say more vulnerable, because, you know, you were probably way vulnerable anyway, because we all are.
Yeah.
That's the thing about
vulnerability.
As you age, you can put that in better perspective with the fact of, wow, well, I was pretty vulnerable and I didn't even realize it. Or I let myself open to that. And I was vulnerable. What was I thinking? You know, I think we certainly get more vulnerable as we age. As a culture, we need to reestablish an understanding of what vulnerability means in the context of where we are now.
I can be a snob that way, where I'm like, the whole Netflix TED Talk thing of like these new gurus. Yeah, I'm just such an outlier that probably a real problem. It's probably held me back. But I tend to be like, if it's coming to me through certain avenues, I sort of circle around a little bit, even if what they're saying is spot on. And that's my limitation.
Well,
it's something I have
to work with. Watermark. I think it's your watermark, too, Jesse, to put it in a proper perspective. If you want excellence with what you're trying to do, then you always have to have set that watermark, you know, at a place that you understand. I think it's an accountability piece. And I think we also just aren't born accountable. It's funny. I mean, we learn accountability.
Interesting.
And I think the basic ethical principles are there for us to define for ourselves. But it does take trial and error. Mm-hmm. And it takes messing up and failing, misunderstanding and not forgiving and rage and anger and all those vital things that we need to understand ourselves in our world.
But I think it's just how you utilize your experience, of course, to make it relevant to other people, that they can gain something from your struggle. People need to take a step back and think about how to turn feeling like a victim into something that can move them forward. And then by doing that, hopefully help plant one little seed.
It's a really interesting topic that you're exploring and always have explored in your songwriting.
Thank you for noticing that. I mean, the overarching thing really about what we're talking about is to find people that you can kind of work out your doubts and your thoughts and reach where you're allowed to reach and maybe even go a little too far out.
Yeah.
And they allow that. That, to mm-hmm. me, is what I fear we're losing. I'm finding less people that are tolerant in that sense, that if people aren't allowed to sort of work their thoughts out and wrangle through and help each other, you know, just let someone go a little out into left field.
Yeah, to have the real conversations.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people don't know how to define the things that become the real conversations. Mm-hmm. And they're even afraid to let the conversations go there, mm-hmm. like to where you it would help you define
exactly.
certain things for yourself. Because what they do is they give you clarity, you know, mm-hmm. again. And so it's a very interesting thing.
Oh, my Lord. Sorry.
That's okay.
Everybody became so obsessed with, oh my Lord.
Somebody's really trying to get a hold of you.
Mom, I'm doing a radio interview. I've got to call you back. Love you. Mom, I'm on the air literally right now. I got to go. Bye.
Please. It is Mother's Day, so.
And then I asked Jesse, what's the significance of coming back after a long break and working on a new album? What does that mean for her and her band?
I want to leave one last little placeholder behind that's relevant, that hopefully transcends.
Yeah. Maybe even what our lives are on this planet and what the culmination of them are at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the song Pleasuring the Divine. I'd love to play it.
Oh,
do you have anything to say about that song?
Well, in the little documentary, I talk about that song, and thank you for digging it. I mean, that was a co-write in that literally, if you could ever imagine what a co-write really looks like, we had broken up, Phil and I, and he had just moved out, and we could not be in the same room with each other, even though, like, I don't know how to even explain it. It was just, it was literally written in a fury, and it was probably written in like 10 minutes.
Interesting.
And, I mean, even the lyrics were really quick, and I came up with the riff, like, down on it. Not the part he's playing, but the chords, you know, these, it just manifested, but within 10 minutes of us sort of coming up with it, he was out the door. Angry fight. I don't think we saw each other for a couple weeks after that. And it is really, like, I think the coolest song on the record. I rarely say that about our own music. It feels like a journey. And I do feel lyrically it embodies something that, like, almost Shakespearean or something. Mm-hmm. I just wanted it to talk about the elements and about the idea of, I mean, what's that line? Like, the heart of every child plucked from the bitter vine, life seemingly sublime. I mean, it's just, I don't know, just the idea of everything we're kind of talking about. Like,
and that's my song for this conversation. So ironically and intuitively, I mean, that was the one song I'm pulling out of the pocket. And I do have to.
Pleasuring the Divine. I guess that.
And I think you've given some great material for that experience. And really thank you for doing that, Jesse. Thanks for being here. And hey, if you ever roll through again, we'll have to, my gosh, continue the conversation for sure.
I could talk to you for hours. I feel like we haven't even begun. I mean,
that's
what's hard about time. You know, it's there's so much to be said, so much to be
shared.
Yes.
You know,
so
which
many
is, and there are times in our lives when we need that more than other times, you know, and I celebrate you.
Well, I just want to say lastly, like, they're lucky to have you. You think about really cool stuff and you tie it all together beautifully. And it's like a little lattice work of how you sort of put the bow on that very difficult conversation. Mm. I appreciate when people can do that. And thank you.
Great. Well.
into your side to the mystery.